That and Wordle. I'm insane at Wordle.
I'm really good at Hurdle.
I cannot figure out Wordle, and I feel like the dumbest person. I had to quit doing it.
I am addicted. Big time.
I can't
wait to wake up and do Wordle.
I love to Wordle every day.
I have no idea where this will lead us, but I have a definite feeling it will be a place both wonderful and strange.
I'll see you again in 25 years. Meanwhile,
rhythmically whooshing back to 1989, I'm Jay.
Flipping James the Bird, I'm Dave Jackson.
Naked in Wyoming. Hey, everybody. I'm Patrick.
And chow day, y'all. I'm Mels.
Welcome to Damn Fine TV's Twin Peaks Rewatch.
This week, we're covering The Return Part 17, sometimes known as The Past Dictates the Future, or as we're calling it, So She's Not Dead? Not wrapped in plastic?
Listeners, we live inside a very important dream, but it's getting slippery in here, so let's rock.
This episode first aired on September 3rd, 2017. It was written by Mark Frost and David Lynch and directed by David Lynch. Shocker.
Well, as you heard in the intro, Dave and Patrick from Talking Backwards are joining us once again. Welcome back, guys.
Hey, thank you for having us again.
Yeah, glad you could be here. This is a big episode. And because it's such a big episode and there's so much to talk about, I think we're going to dive right in. I mean, our overall thoughts are that we loved it. It rules. Let's get to it.
Yeah, that's the general vibe here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Gordon shares a secret with Albert and Tammy, and, well, I guess we will talk about Judy after all. After apologizing to Albert, Cole receives a message via Bushnell from our dear old Dale.
There's so much information, like, all of a sudden in this scene.
So much.
Like, yeah. It makes my head spin how much we get in this. I don't know if you call it an opening sequence. I don't know if you call it an opening 15 minutes. Like, I don't know what you call it, but there's so much.
I'm still just so mad that Cole is sitting on all of this the entire time. You have a new inductee to this task force. This is what it's all about. And he knew it all and just chose not to share, just compartmentalized this, like what it's about.
I have my own feelings about this. I think I said this on ours, but I was like, I think he withheld this information from Albert because of what happened to Cole and Chet Desmond and Philip Jeffries. Because I question when Albert was in the Blue Rose Task Force, because, I mean, we didn't know what the Blue Rose Task Force was in season one, season two, or even Fire Walk With Me for that matter. Albert always just seemed like semi-involved, but I never looked at Albert as like, this dude knows what's going on. This dude knows the secrets. And clearly he doesn't know the secrets. So I don't know when he got recruited to the Blue Rose Task Force. In my head, it was sometime in that 25 years. He just worked his way. And Cole was like, you know what? You're all I got left, but I'm not telling you shit. So
I mean, okay,
more
I agree,
of a protect,
yeah.
More of a protection.
Yeah.
But you could have given a little bit of heads up. I mean, do you think Indiana Jones would have made it through the Temple of Doom if he didn't have some key notes to go off of as he, or was it, no, it was the Last Crusade. Right. He's going to get the Holy Grail. He survives every trap because he's got an inkling of what to do. Just give him a hint, like give him a little heads up. Otherwise, they're going to end up on one of those spikes that come out of the wall.
That's
instead,
right.
he was giving Albert the mother-sister-girl code nonsense the whole time. No, no definitive anything.
And knowing Albert, he probably shrugged all of that off.
But Albert too, like earlier on, I think it was in part four when they're having that chat after talking to Cooper, and Albert reveals all that stuff where, you know, they got a man, or he accidentally got a man killed by giving information to Cooper. It was just
true.
I don't want to say Cole does go and, you know, it looks like this is new information to him, but that wouldn't even surprise me if Cole knew that and was like, I can't tell you because I know, you know, it wouldn't shock me at all.
Right.
Like whole new thing.
But I can't tell you that I know that because it will lead to other things. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in the middle of like both of what Dave and Patrick have just said. Like the main thing that pisses me off to Dave's point is how do you sit on the fact that you know that Jeffries is a fucking percolator all these years? Like at least give him that. Like
he knows.
He knows. He was like, it
doesn't really exist anymore.
But, right. And, I mean, I found that to be the most surprising piece of information. It's like Albert. I mean, I love the way that Albert takes it all in because he's always like no nonsense and you can't tell on his face. And then Miss Tammy's over there like, what? But if I was Albert and he were to no, I'm just kidding. And Cole was sitting there and he was like, and then there's Jeffries in some non, you know, physical form or what, however he put it, I would have been like, wait a minute. So he's not disappeared.
Let's roll back. What do you mean by that? Like, yeah.
Stop right there.
How do you
this isn't
know?
A real missing persons. Yeah, exactly.
Were you
this
there is- or did somebody report back to you? And if that's the case, why is that not in the books?
Yeah. Like, so okay, I can Cole see
Jeffries,
the
not
protection.
Missing yeah. is a teapot.
That's right.
Yeah, at some point, Gordon Cole opened a door and saw a vision of the percolator Jeffries. And that, and he just saw it for 5 seconds. And he's
and
like,
then it was
oh,
Albert.
Okay.
And then it was, yeah. And then it was Albert.
It was, yeah, then it was Albert. It's always Albert.
Always.
And he's like, what are you looking at, Gordon? It's like, oh, all of a sudden I want tea. So, but yeah, it was a lot of information. I do love that he apologized to him. And Albert was like, okay, really? It's fine. Because honestly, Albert's just like, really don't care. Let's talk about real time. What are we going to be doing going forward? And he's like, no. I really apologize. And I was like, okay, we got it. Like, thumbs up. But
what do you think about the fact that Gordon says Coop told him he was trying to kill two birds with one stone?
Yeah, that stood out to me way more this time because I was like, it made me wonder if that scene in part one, because we never know when that is, it made me just want, even though when he would have told him this information, he would have been young. But again, with time and Twin Peaks,
exactly.
I hate to say it already this soon, but like it makes you wonder. Yeah. Or if it was a coincidence, perhaps even that the fireman said it.
Just another echo.
You know, after Cooper had. Yeah. Another echo, another double. So.
Specifically because the fireman repeated it back to the sort of dazed Cooper.
Right.
It's like, remember two birds with one stone. And his things listening back is like, you know what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Like, let me remind you because I feel like you've lost it somewhere.
Yes.
Like, you're not complete. So let me put this back in your head because you were on the right track.
Absolutely. And I don't know which one is correct because at first I was like, ha, that proves it. Like Cooper's already done this and he's just repeating. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, no, it could just be the other way around, like very easily. So
I remember listening back to your episodes about that situation where you're like, brother man, realize that you're in a loop, like you've done this before and you're about to do it again. I liked that, but I hearing it kind of like Patrick, like when I listened back to it today and saw that moment, it was like, I feel like Cooper already had that in his head at some point that was his plan. And the fireman was just giving him a refresher.
Right. Yeah.
Just like, hey, while I've got you. Like,
by the
like
way.
Last time I really parsed out the information, but now that you have the information, let me give it back to you.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Not going to show you the post-script. Secrets of the universe, though, like I showed Andy. Yeah, I'm just going to repeat some info.
Yeah.
Like,
you
know, you've got too much on your plate already.
Don't want to overload you.
Does he ever?
One thing that stood out to me was the paid informant reveal for Ray.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just thought, man, that's just so cool. Mm-hmm. You know, it made me wonder if George Griffith, the actor, like even knew that since he's not in this scene. Like, did he even know this? So I just thought that was just one of the coolest reveals. Like, oh man, like then I'm just thinking like how he got hired and just how he ended up working with Mr. C. How long has he been working with Mr. C? It was just really cool and it's fun to think about.
And if we want to believe that he was on the phone with Philip Jeffries, as we know him proper before, then that means he's in contact with both Philip Jeffries and Gordon Cole. Could he be the guy who told him he was a teapot? But if he knew he was a teapot, then why would it be weird to him when ghosts came out of nowhere to save the guy he shot's life?
true.
100%. Like, thank you for saying that.
But maybe there's a difference between knowing that there's somebody that's a teapot and seeing some otherworldly creatures. Like, see it to get freaked out by it.
Yeah, I guess.
But doesn't Ray say he's never met him?
Yeah, I think you're
doesn't
right.
Doesn't Ray say he indicates that he never actually, like... Okay. He's
well, that's what I mean. So he just
him.
Knows. He just knows that this man is a teapot, but he's never seen it.
Hi, Ray. I'm Philip. I just want to let you know I'm a teapot, actually.
Now my head's hurting because I'm like, did he? He might not have even known he was a teapot. I don't know. But
yeah, he catfished him over the phone.
He teapotted him.
I promise I'm a real person.
Mel's got one of those classic Twin Peaks headaches. I get them all the time.
He never said about full body shot. Like, total catfish.
A screenshot from Firewalk with Me.
It's just a blurred image. That's it. Oh, God. I'm living
from like
for
far
them.
Away, but blown up.
All grainy. Like, I'm sorry. Hold on.
Super grainy.
Oh, just full body shot. Okay. All right. I got to get it together.
That's great.
Okay. Back at Twin Peaks, Chad's douche takes a snooze, but awakes to thwart Chad of any wrongdoing. Ominous, atmospheric music leads us hot on the tail of Mr. C as Nido becomes increasingly agitated.
Okay, so Bloody Face Dude, whatever we want to call him, whoever he is.
He's credited as drunk, by the way.
Yeah, I know, but...
I just love that. It's just like, oh, drunk.
I've been drunk before.
I played a drunk in Twin Peaks.
Not really that.
That's me.
For me, anyway. for me either.
I don't eat barbed wire sandwiches when I've been drinking, but okay, go on with it.
Yum. I did note down that he repeats something that Freddy says, which doesn't necessarily mean that he's any more real than we've thought him to be, but Freddy maybe looks in his direction. Like, he looks away from Nido, then the camera takes us to Bloody Dude, so I'm like, is he there? What is he hearing? What is Freddy looking at?
I agree. And it made me wonder if it's because Freddy is tapped in, unlike other people.
Maybe. It's cleverly shot, too, in that way where you never see him in the same frame as anybody else.
Right.
No. I guarantee this has been talked about already. The fact that drunk, or as I call him Billy.
Sure. Yeah.
Is parroting everything that he hears. He doesn't have an original thought. So much like a minor bird we may have heard of before, he is just calling back.
Yeah.
Yep.
I love it.
Ben receives a call from Jackson Hole concerning Jerry and his hole, who claims his binoculars have committed murder.
There's been another murder.
But Jerry and his hole means, you know, he ain't got no clothes on. So if you have to explain the joke, it
like
ain't
me.
Funny. Yeah.
He's naked in Wyoming.
That's right. Yeah.
I was... walking around the woods of Twin Peaks.
For sure.
Which I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but the woods are wondrous here. But also strange. Don't want to leave that part out. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit important.
Well, it's full of naked men.
There's a lot of trees and there's a lot of trees and things to admire. Mm-hmm. But at some point I didn't know if I was lost for 30 minutes or 30 days. The time just got a little weird. I was running and I was looking for an answer in the sky, but I don't know why. And the only thing that I knew for sure is that my foot was my foot.
It was your foot?
And at some point, my clothes came off. I mean, these kind of things happen, and I make no apologies for it.
Wow.
Welcome to the show, Jerry Horn, everybody. Woo!
Who's Jerry Horn?
That might be you.
Maybe we're one and the same.
How many special brownies did you eat before coming here today?
How many Dr. Amp shows did you consume?
315.
Perfect. Yep.
Oh, I just love and am fascinated and could just always, I know this is what I've said before. I want an everyday of the Mitchum brothers. I also want just an everyday of Jerry Horn.
I think we just got a sneak peek. Like, I think we just got the sneak peek trailer from Patrick.
I forgot he was on the show with us. I just want special footage. I want the camera footage from the police station in Jackson Hole of Jerry Horn, butt fucking naked, telling everybody that his binoculars just electrocuted someone.
That like, is a scene. That...
Do you think he still has the hat on, though? I really hope he still has the hat on. And that's
no, 1,000%.
Okay. Oh my God, if it had transitioned to a cops like just on TV and that's how someone found out about it and it was just them, that would have been the funniest.
It would have been a Reno 911, I feel like. Like this would have been a
Lucy's watching it perfect. Instead of Invitation to Love.
Yeah, a little, little blurred circle around his waistline as he's bolting across the parking lot.
With a hat on.
Oh yes, God. The hat stays. The hat stays.
Yeah. Or a Tukey, as Jasmine calls it. What is it?
Tukey. Tukey.
That's so cute. That's like a kid's version. I'm get your little so Tukey.
Well,
that Tuke is off the roof.
Tukey's on fire. Okay. Whew. All right. Mr. C takes the scenic route in Twin Peaks, stumbling upon the liquid hot magma and the vortex. He catches up with Major Briggs in the VIP section of the lodge and is transported to the sheriff's department. Talk about going around your ass to get to your elbow. Couldn't he have just fucking walked? I don't understand it. I love you, David Lynch, but fucking why? He's on the outskirts of town.
All of this is so fascinating, just from top to bottom, because the long walk to the woods, like you see, okay, we're at Jackrabbit's palace. I'd forgotten there's even just a shot where it's just panning up like there's a tree here. Have you noticed the tree?
Yeah.
Like, I guess I haven't noticed. Like, did I just zone out every other time I've watched this episode, which has been a lot? And just like I was noticing just random details. But then, then he gets sucked up. And he's in a cage.
Wow.
And again, like this, I was like thinking of like, that would have been cool to see him walking in there, like in the theater, to have almost like a Mr. C one-on-one talk or confrontation with the fireman instead of just the fireman floating. That would have been cool. But no, we get this David Lynch visual. Major Briggs' head is floating here, just hanging out. Mm-hmm. Mr. Silent. C's face is in a square cage. We see the Palmer House. We swipe right, and here's the sheriff station parking lot. Like, what is going on?
So much happens in such a short amount of time, too. Yeah.
You can follow it. You can follow along. It's not difficult to follow along. Right. It's just shown to you in a way that is this show, only this show can do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a very strange reveal. I've got a little bit of beef.
Oh, tell me. Okay.
You got beef?
So yeah, I got beef. So Mr. C approaches the spot, like where all this goes down, and proceeds to like, he's following these coordinates on his phone and proceeds to like scan the area over the pool and up the tree. It's like, my guy, this is obviously the place.
Never be too sure, Dave.
But Dave, I'm so glad you're back with us because I feel like you and I connect with when it comes to things like this. That's exactly what I mean by this whole sequence where I'm like, brother, you are on the outskirts of town. Mm-hmm. Walk your ass. We've seen you walk plenty of times into town. Like, and then, like you just said, you got to skip. Sir,
that's the thing.
Yes, you're in the spot. Like, what else do like
what gave it away? The fog, the magma.
How about the magma? Right. How about the vortex?
Obviously, he's in the right spot.
The liquid gold,
but he doesn't.
The forest.
But he doesn't know what he's trying. Like, yes, that's right. But like, he doesn't. Yes. I don't think he knows the end game. The coordinates. Right. He has the coordinates, but I don't think he knows where they lead, other than knowing that it's to Judy. But
I think
how
you can
does
piece
that
together that this is where you're supposed to be, though.
I thank you.
Yeah, no,
Dave.
I agree.
Well, I agree with that part. Yeah.
That makes sense. Like that I agree with. But I'm saying once he's there, like he doesn't know like what he's where he's going to beyond that.
Like
which is
where
it's supposed
he's
to take him. Yeah, it's
to
supposed to take him to the Palmer House.
Sure.
It's supposed to take him to the Palmer House. But
do you think Frodo and Samwise got to the top of the mountain, looked out and saw Mordor and thought, I don't know.
This doesn't look right. This, have you checked the map?
It's not exactly on the map, but...
Okay, I am dying here. Again, and listeners, I want you all to know, the way that our squares are right now, Dave and I are on top, Yay for tops.
Oh, not, Jasmine and Patrick, not on my screen.
On my screen. So it's
Jasmine.
Almost,
Jasmine and I are on tops.
It's like Hollywood squares here, but the right ones are on top, just so you all know.
No, the wrong
I am with you. Like, it one. Just... Context clue, sir.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just talking about why he's there. Like, I get that it's hilarious that he's
what I
like,
love is you and Jasmine
it.
Are just like, well, now hold on. He doesn't like you're just giving Mr. C of all people all of this credit and leeway. And
well, actually, I think my credit is going to whoever is putting this together because to me, this feels like a second trap. Like,
okay,
we
it
can
is.
Assume
it
that
is.
Wherever
yeah.
Richard was yeah. electrified in the previous episode was definitely a trap. But this, to me, I mean, it's very basic visual language, but the fact that Major Briggs' head is free-floating while Mr. C is inside of a cage is clearly a trap. So
sure.
I think my credit goes to that side of things, for sure.
Yeah.
So I had an observation with Talking Backwards, where we were having a discussion about, I think it was
is
just...
Is that the name of your podcast?
I was about to say who's
it
that?
Is. It is, in fact.
Oh, okay.
Never heard of it.
And we were discussing the return as a whole, like kind of recapping it. And I asked if had Cooper jumped off the block in space after Nido
when
she
sure.
when she threw the switch, would he also have just landed in Jackrabbit's palace?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you did.
Right.
I remember asking that. Well, in this case, I wonder if Gordon Cole had been sucked up into the vortex during the vacant lot sequence,
part
would
11.
He have just mm-hmm. suddenly accidentally been in the Bob cage? Because
hmm.
clearly the White Lodge has built a better Bob trap. It's efficient.
Interesting.
It puts you there. But then would he not have immediately been spit out at the sheriff station? So now Gordon Cole's at the sheriff station.
Okay.
And he can go, oh, obviously,
right.
we need to connect.
I like where you're going with this. Yeah. This is what I'm thinking. What if the vortex where Gordon almost got sucked up, okay, because it wasn't the vortex that Andy got sucked up into, mm-hmm. which was in this spot, right? Andy got sucked up into the vortex here. Listen, we've talked about vortexes. Those are in other episodes. I won't go rehash all of that. But what if this vortex, because it's obvious that it will take you to the VIP section because that is where Andy went, right?
Right, right.
But mm-hmm. what if Gordon had got sucked
lounge.
Up? Right. What if he had gotten sucked up? What if he had ended up somewhere that's not that? Like, I wonder where that vortex would have spit him out at, is all I'm saying. Mm. I think I obviously agree with the fact that vortexes, they can be like anywhere, but
sure.
it just makes me wonder. It's like there are plenty of pipes in Super Mario Brothers, but
sure.
depending on which one you go down is which world you end up in, right? So,
correct.
Yeah. Which warp zone are you going to end up in? If you take that path, yeah.
Well, clearly the one that Freddy went up to takes him to the same place, the fireman.
Well, that's a good point.
Then there's different portals for each side. Like they each can open a vortex because it was not the Black Lodge that took Mr. C because that's not where he ended up. He didn't end up in the Red Room. He ended up in the Black and White Zone.
Right.
With the firemen. Yeah, well, I guess we're calling it the White Lodge. Ended up there. So they have like rival portals. So we don't know who's trying to suck who. We don't know.
Who's sucking who?
Wow, this is the second episode
the
in a row
old,
that a joke like that has gone
question.
Down.
That's a double.
It just we don't know. We don't know.
Correct.
We don't.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can save this if we think it's going to go too deep. I don't know if we want to go deep tonight. I mean, I'm interested, but I don't know. There's a question that I want to deep dive on.
Okay.
Again. It's what would have happened if Mr. C had gone to where I think the coordinates were supposed to take him, which was to the Palmer House? What would have happened?
Well, would he have been meeting up with Sarah, like the Sarah we see at the end of the episode?
Bob and Judy reuniting.
That's what I mean. That's the only thought I can form in my head.
Well, see, I'm also wondering, like, you know, what Palmer House would he have been exited
Ooh.
To?
Ooh.
Like, there's
yeah.
no reason for us
Ooh,
to right. believe that it would have been in a different
I like that
timeline
a lot too.
Or anything, but
I know.
Why not? So,
huh.
Yeah. Well, I already think the firemen can send people to other
timelines. Wherever. Sure.
So, yeah. So it's very possible. Very possible. I need to reveal something here because I can't really wait any longer. This was sort of a mind-blowing thing for me today. He gets spit out into the parking lot.
Yes.
And of the sheriff's station. And he sees Andy. And there is a shot where you see his point of view and he's looking towards Andy. And you hear him say, "What is this?" You don't see him say it because he's not in the shot. You hear him say, "What is this?" I swear I didn't like line it up on like a timeline or anything, but I watched the videos back to back a lot. I swear it's the exact same line of dialogue of Mr. C at the farm saying, "What is this?"
It's kindergarten.
It's the exactly
exact
the same.
Exact same.
Yeah. I mean, did all of you not say kindergarten right after?
I did immediately, yeah. immediately. And I was like, they played the same line of dialogue here.
Yeah, I dig mm-hmm. it.
And he didn't say this here. I wonder if like when they were editing, if they were just like, he needs to question
we
this.
We need something here. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And if they had already, I don't know how the editing went, because I know this was also the first Mr. C scene that was shot like in the first month of production was this scene with Andy. So it's that was crazy to me because I was just like, let me just listen to it back to back and I swear it's the same.
Oh yeah. I wouldn't be surprised.
I have two observations about this shot of him arriving at the station. The first is the shot from behind with his hair clip very much in full view.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's
the only time,
not really. Just a gorgeous piece of jewelry and a practical accessory. It's also an eye.
Ooh.
This guy has an eye in the back of his head.
No.
Jasmine thought it was the FBI pin.
I've heard that a lot.
I think it is. Mm. I still think so. Although I don't buy that can be a hair clip. Not with Mr. C's hair.
I think he fashioned that into a hair clip. He's crafty, y'all.
Okay,
DIY. He is crafty. Sure.
But ever since Jasmine said that to me, I was like, oh, he's just taunting everybody by wearing the FBI pin.
I watched this episode as God intended on DVD on a PlayStation 2.
Sure.
So maybe my visual quality isn't enough to really dial in. But the pin looked to me very much like the shape of the eye with just a circle in the middle. Yeah. It looked like just a bedazzled eye. So that really struck me. I was like, oh, he's got eyes in the back of his head. That's really clever.
I like that.
So maybe I'm completely wrong on that. But
I'll roll with it.
This would not be the first time that I had an observation. And then it was just like, oh, yeah, that's completely not what you're looking at all. But the other thing is Andy's picnic basket.
Mm-hmm. What is he doing?
It's a nice day for a picnic.
Yeah, where's he going? It's a nice day for a picnic.
Oh, I love it.
Okay, wow. I just had electricity go off in my head. Because the whole time I was like, where the fuck have you been with a picnic basket? Everything that's going on in this world, it amazes me that the foolery going on. Okay, but now I understand it's a nice day for a picnic.
It's good, it is.
I think it's like Twin Peaks law that if it's a nice day for a picnic, you have to have a picnic.
You have to have a picnic basket. Love that. Aww. Down in the cells, James and Freddie try to decipher Nido's warning, and Chad somehow bores his douche to sleep. Shenanigans ensue up top, and Five Finger Freddie delivers a death punch to Bob. Afterwards, Coop delivers his own dream speech, complete with sandwiches.
Andy is so excited to see quote-unquote Cooper,
mm-hmm.
and then gets Lucy all pumped. And then he just stands there and starts to have the revelations about what the fireman told him. And I about died laughing, like just how shook this man is.
Mm-hmm.
And then like from there, do we think he's playing some kind of shenanigans on Mr. C? Is Andy smart enough to do that? Because he has the realization and then he's off to like put pieces in place for everything to go down. But he goes in, gets a chair for Mr. C, offers to put on some coffee. Like, I don't know. It felt weird that he did that whole part, even though he had the revelation already.
It's trust but verify kind of, right? So sure. Like, he has the information. He sees this person he hasn't seen in so long. He doesn't know how he's supposed to look. He himself looks pretty different. So yeah, let's
Like,
that's fair.
Be stoked to see your friend. Get excited. Get Lucy excited. And then
that's 25 true. Years.
Then mull it over for a second and let it hit.
But it's like Dougie all over again. Like, nobody is like, man, the years have not been kind to this man. Yeah. Like, he used to be dapper.
It's like the end of The Graduate, right? When they were, have we all seen The Graduate?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So
Jasmine hasn't.
Yep, Jasmine cool. hasn't. Okay, cool. So
that's par for the course.
Spoiler alerts for The Graduate. But the guy goes and like stops his lady from getting married, and he absconds with her from the chapel, and they jump in the car, and they're like, ha ha, we did it, we're running away together, ha ha ha. And they're in the back of the car, just like stoked, and then it lingers for a bit, and they're like,
yeah. Do you know why I know this? The Simpsons.
I was about to say, yeah.
There you go.
But it's that like that dissolution of excitement to realization of like, oh, maybe this isn't what I think it is. And then after having had that realization and not having completely made sense of the dreams, because who has yet? He pulls up a chair, offers this man a coffee. He says, "Turn down coffee. I don't think
that,
so. Pal.
That was it.
Right.
That was
okay." It.
Yeah.
So that was gotcha.
And that's when he really pumps into high gear. That's when Andy, for the first time in his life, breaks scuttle into a jog.
He scuttlebutts across. I'm talking about scuttlebutt right out there. Lucy, very important. Very important. So I don't know if he told, Lucy about any of this, because these little events right here, I mean, it's weird because he tells them at Jack Rabbit's palace, though, you like, we can't tell anybody this, right?
Right.
But it's like when he says, very important, very important. It's almost like the part with Diane and when she's a tulpa, and it's like something triggered like a reaction in her. So Lucy's sitting there hole punching, right? And then he's like, very important, very important. And then all of a sudden she's like, you know, glazed like
it's their
over.
Code word for something.
Right. Yeah. So I'm like, what did he tell her? Maybe he didn't tell her everything, but maybe he was like, if I say very important two times in a row, Lucy, as I scuttlebutt, you need to do something.
Lucy, if you ever see me moving quickly, understand that you need to find a gun.
I love
it. So that's that right there, though. Like, he's never shown Lucy with a gun. He's shown a totally, completely different ending. The ending he's shown is him walking Lucy up to the door, and that never happens.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, he gets shown two Coopers, so that was probably triggered with the coffee thing. He's like, oh, yeah, I saw two of you.
Right.
Okay.
That dimensions out. Lucy is always packing.
Yeah.
She don't wear them crochet sweaters for nothing. Mm-mm. All right. It's a very great way to conceal and carry.
Mm-hmm. So I don't think he told her anything, because especially with her, I understand cell phones now reveal being that's what made her understand it.
Yes.
Was when the real Cooper called.
Who?
Which was amazing.
I love that.
Kimmy is so good.
Yeah.
Yes.
I listen, Kimmy also shooting him is one of the coolest things. I think I've mentioned it before, but the parallel with Andy shooting Jacques in season one, I like that a lot, that it's both of them. It just makes me think that scene we're shown of Andy walking her to the door where she does shoot him is interesting, because he never does that.
Right.
What if he's doing it behind the scenes? What if?
Oh, maybe we don't see it.
Yeah, because where did she get the gun? Maybe he walked her in there and gave her the gun, and then he scuttlebutted on down to the cells. I don't know.
They make it. They make it look like when the gunshots go off, he reacts while he's down in the jail cell.
Yes.
So unless he's super speedy, which I don't know that he is, he takes his. So here's another thing. Another observation. He's very slow and calm getting everyone up to the room after Mr. C's been shot. Everyone comes in very slowly, just like calm and what's going on here. But then 45 seconds to a minute later, Hawk is running. Where was he?
Right?
He's running.
Yes.
I'm like, what is going on here?
Because he's still in the bathroom.
Oh, he was pooping. He was pooping.
Again.
I can't get the door back on here. Everybody, the door's still off.
He was holding it closed because it doesn't latch anymore.
Oh. Yeah, and it fell down, yeah. And so he was trying to get it back up. And
he was waddling out with his pants around his ankles, like, ah, gotta get there, gotta get there. Oh, man. I love this, though. Well, I mean, obviously, I think it's fair to say, like, that whole, the whole time I was watching this, the only thing my brain could process was that all of the multiverses are converging into one thing. Like, there's a possibility that in this timeline, Andy has Walt's Lucy with a gun, and then she shoots him. But then in the next level up of the tower, as I keep referring to this as, Andy is down in the cell letting everybody out. And then, you know, in this level, this is happening. And then when everybody gets together to defeat Bob, it is just like the Avengers, where they are, they're all together. You know Assemble. What I mean? I don't know how to explain that really properly.
No, it feels like that.
Yeah, it just feels like it's a bunch of the linear timelines occurring, and you're being shown that. But the end result of it is where they all come together, because kind of like after Bob is defeated, we move on to something totally not related to anything we've been looking at or discussing or anything happening from that point all the way back to part one. Right. Mm. So it just seems like it's the culmination of these towers. Like you're at the top and all of the levels have come together or something. Mm-hmm. So
it's like the supports are being broken from under different floors and everything's just kind of falling on top of each other and overlapping.
Because while I was saying that, I was imagining the tower falling too. So I love that. Yeah.
That's why we're on top.
Only on your screen.
As it's falling, somehow the hat.
Okay. Fuck, that's a good shot.
Right up.
That's so good.
Classic cat pop.
Cat pop.
What? What? Okay. You're going to have to E-L-I-5. Please explain like I'm five.
Sure.
This was very like, I guess, spaghetti Western to me type thing where it's like, but you're like old Western, right? Yes. And like the person's hat goes, whoa, you know?
Yeah.
But.
Like just missed him.
Right. But there was like, there was no evidence that Mr. C even really fired a shot. See, this is where maybe I'm trying to look too deep. Maybe I'm trying to just look for something that's obviously not there and not ever going to be and maybe not meant to be. But it's just odd to me that the shot is fired, but it's in the POV of what would be Mr. C, but Lucy behind him at the same time, presumably, right? Looking at Frank, and his hat pops up. So you think that it's Mr. C shooting at him and missing him, and you get this little, like, old Western funny thing. But you realize also that Lucy has shot Mr. C. I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but it's just odd because I'm like, does he have a gun that has blanks in it? Maybe does he have like, I don't know.
I was about to posit that perhaps Ray's long con was to replace a bullet of Mr. C's with a blank. So when he says tricked you, he wasn't talking about that particular instance.
Ooh,
like, see?
Not now, maybe not tomorrow.
Later.
But later.
Maybe in part 17.
Yeah, maybe in part 17.
Maybe once you've teleported 2 miles down the road through the White Lodge. Yeah.
Dave, are you upset that Jesse didn't run in and say, I heard shots?
Well, I'm always angry that Jesse doesn't run in.
Aw.
Yeah. But
classic little sweetie, huh?
He is such a classic little sweetie. I do wonder where he was at this time.
He's in the dispatch room with that sassy lady that told Chad, you know, you're a dick or whatever she called him, you know, Maggie? An asshole or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
You're just sitting in there looking at that clock.
I think we skipped over it a little bit, but one of the most satisfying moments in the series as a whole for me was Chad getting knocked the fuck out by Freddy's club.
Whew. It's amazing. I do wonder why Chad took so much care to not be seen getting the key by drunk / Billy. Like he was a sleeping watchdog. But what was this guy going to do if he saw you get that key? Like, what's the threat there?
Also, why now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You've been sitting on this?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, he's been standing on it. But He's been laying on it. So if we're going with the theory, hear me out, that this is like Chad's subconscious projection, that is drunk guy in the cell, right? Because that's kind of where my mind is at now on this.
Same.
I am kind of impressed with the mental gymnastics that Chad, who we know as Chad, would have to be doing in his mind to A, realize this, and B, so this is me almost kind of disproving why, like, my whole thing on this is his projection, right? His douche, his outside douche. Because how did he get him to fall asleep? Because it's like in that first scene with them, right? He's reaching into the boot, but douche projection wakes up and he stops. So it's like he knows. But then he somehow, because it's not like he just passes out, like, back asleep. Like, he full-blown, like, head out, like, blackout, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, how did this happen for Chad to then get the key out and go do all of this stuff? It's just odd. I guess I'm walking myself through this maybe not being the projection of the bad that is Chad. I don't know, but...
It's like that classic sleepy junkyard dog.
It is, yeah.
Like the in the cartoons when, you know, the bandit's trying to sneak through and this dog's going, and then,
yes. So then in that way, it kind of feels more like a conscience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It does.
It's like, should I break out?
And like, why does he rip all that stuff off his face and make me want to puke? Why?
Yeah, it's really upsetting.
It's so upsetting.
It's odd. Yeah.
Is that like, because that's, it's like mirroring how brutal Chad is about to become or something? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know, like, but Freddy for the win, man.
It's like all the restraints are coming off almost.
Yeah.
It's like all this stuff that's like fastened tight to your face, you pull that off and it's like taking the gloves off, you know, and loosening the belt. It's like, all right, I'm ready to get nimble and do some stuff. But it's just in a very different
I know what you're saying, Dave. I know what you're saying.
We also know what you're saying, but that's just this show, okay? We're always going to take it there. Yeah. Should we head to the Bob Orb?
Yeah.
First thing that like really stood out to me this time around, maybe I noticed it before, but anyway, that the like attack sounds of the Bob Orb are exactly like glass box figure. Like, this is the same sounds that we heard when Sam and Tracy were murdered, which makes me feel like, I mean, this is a whole can of worms, but like, it makes me feel like there's less of a connection between whatever Judy is and the glass box. Because why are the sounds happening right now with Bob?
Right. Listen to the sounds.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm glad you listened to the sounds.
I did catch a couple other things sound wise in the scene that I thought were interesting. With the attacks. So first of all, I was a little wishy-washy on Freddy the first go around. I've really come around on Freddy's role because this kid who has no context for this.
Right.
Is all in, no questions asked.
Should have been Nadine.
Proceeds to get absolutely bodied by this evil orb.
Yeah.
And we don't really see it. We just get these awkward shots of the face coming in and out and then of Freddy getting bloodier and bloodier on the floor. He is just getting slammed so rapidly by this thing. And it's extremely violent. If you can see it from a third person perspective, I'm sure it's just.
Yeah.
But with like slashy sounds, and he's just getting
one for the grandkids. I mean,
yeah, he's absolutely getting wrecked as the ball.
I thought he was going to lose.
Yeah, I thought that was it.
No way.
This is your destiny.
I'm not going to lie.
When
he said, this is my destiny, I actually like burst out crying this time around. I don't know why, but for some reason, that moment I was like, all right, Freddy, let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah, I was totally in his corner because like I said, this kid is all in and he's just here for it. He's down. And it's very scary for him because he immediately gets floored.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's that moment where it cuts to the ball and there's the distorted line of, I'll catch you in my death bag.
Yeah.
Like he is coming in for the kill. Yeah. Very scary stuff.
That's the best part.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
Agreed.
Catch you with my death bag is also something I use on the rag. All right. Like I am like, don't fuck with me. I will catch you with my death bag. And the reason terrifying. I say that is
and the guy at Arby's is like, what does that mean?
Well, I'm tying heartbeats. This into something that I find a little funny to me.
Okay.
How Jasmine, so what Jasmine says just now about there not being the connection, like, so much with, you know, the figure in the box or quote unquote Judy, however you want to, you know, do that. I think, remember in part 8 when she vomits out, or it, what, whatever, vomits yes, out yeah. Bob, Orb. I see this as Bob in a womb, Bob Ball, Bob Orb. Like, everything is like what we saw in part 8, like, now that Freddy is defeating him. So Freddy's daddy. So now I'm like, I can't. Got catchy with my death bag because it is a womb to me. I know this sounds absolutely nuts. Whoa, what y'all are okay. thinking about or what I'm saying, and y'all are probably
life
like,
"Your death bag versus death bag."
Yeah,
you're I'm going with you, Mel's. Way out there. But I was like, no. "There's something right now because a womb swells." I'm gonna give you a little birds and bees. This whatever anatomy. The womb swells before you give birth, which that's what it looked like. I always called it the Bob Orb, though, in part 8. And this time around, I was like,
you called your womb the Bob Orb.
always. Yeah. Anyway, I guess what I'm trying to make a long story short, 4 hours later, this is what I'm trying to say.
4 hours
I now see it as like she vomits out the Bob Orb, but that's her way of like kind of like we talked about the suffering of women when it comes to Judy or Jowday and everything that goes along with it. We talked about childbirth being part of that. So I was like, the Bob bag is a womb. Okay.
And yeah. I see what you're saying.
And that's how I'm directing it to part 8 or relating it there. So anyway, but yeah, Mel's, I have. Yes.
Anytime I have any Bob Ball questions, I'm coming to you. You are the expert. You are the Bob Ball connoisseur.
I'm the ball correct. Connoisseur. All of them.
That's right. All kinds of sorts.
All shapes, so. Sizes, colors. Whew. All of them.
Okay, what else do we have about Bob Orbs? Anything?
I love that it breaks into some glass. I love everything about
Obsidian, the Bob perhaps?
Orb. It definitely is obsidian all day long.
Obsidian.
I love that. Amphibian.
Such a good song.
Yeah.
Well, I had one last note about it. I do love that we maybe think Freddy has defeated it. It goes up in flames and then it's almost like the fire recharges it and it comes back for another round. Cause it made me think about when Hawk and Frank were looking at the map and they were like, well, depends on what the, like, is this fire good or bad? Well, it depends on the intention of the fire. This fire was obviously had the bad intention, but yeah.
So after the orb is fully defeated.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of people gathering around, like people just keep coming in as this Cooper shell lays on the ground. I don't understand the necessity of putting a ring on this thing. I don't know why you put a ring on it.
Better put a ring on it.
But we don't like it.
We like it.
But we don't like it.
It's a rewrite. It's a rewrite.
So I feel like this is a thing that you take out back and burn because this feels like a waste of a ring. This was the doppelganger that was just hosting the thing that just got taken out. Like, that was what was driving, not this body.
Sure.
This is just the vessel that it was driving.
But this is the lodge's trash to take out. Like, this ain't their job.
Yeah, but I feel like you hang on to the ring.
I feel, it's like, why would you waste that on something that's it's no longer needed, necessary, like it's done. You know what I mean? Like when we've seen the ring before, like when Dougie, you know, went back in or whatever. I don't know how to explain what I'm trying to think of here. But yeah, it's like in this instance, what this was manufactured for, it's done because Bob's done, right? Yeah. So don't even understand. I guess the ring just needs to be back in the lodge where it belongs, perhaps. But I'm the same way. I would have kept that fine piece of jewelry.
Like if you bring a sack to catch a coyote in because it's messing with your stuff and the coyote turns up dead, you don't still put it in the sack. You're just like, okay, well, I guess perfectly good sack. Let's just hang on to this.
What do you do with it?
To Dave's point, though, about taking it out back and setting it on fire, that's what they do. I mean, the spoiler section, I guess, but in part 18, he's on fire.
Well, that's
in the Black Lodge. No,
well, that's what I was thinking of when I said this is the lodge's trash to take out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Fair enough. All right.
Okay.
Scratch out last 8 minutes.
Oh my God. I love the fact that you click it. The click of the pin was so audible where it's like, scratch that off. Right off the list.
Dave's, when the episode's done, there's just, please, let's get footage of Dave going to his backyard and just setting his notepad on fire. I'm like, damn it.
Don't waste a bag on it. Just put it on fire, okay?
The bag's over my shoulder. I just...
I want to see a video of you taking it and like doing the trash can dump that everybody, like when you're taking the trash out angrily. Have you seen those videos where it's like doing things angrily, like make it like getting out of bed?
Yeah.
Right? And it's like taking it, and it's like, pow! You know, you take
the trash. You're just like throwing it up in the air and just swatting
that's what I want angry. To see. With, I want you to get green hand washing gloves, like green latex gloves.
God. And
I want you to punch it straight into the trash can.
I love this.
Making a lot of demands of me.
A lot of work. A lot of work for
Dave. I don't hear your pen clicking to take these notes, by the way. So.
Well, he doesn't need to. It's all up here. He's not going to forget that.
Right.
That's true. What I love, because I think we've talked a lot about like candy in particular and like what is it about candy? I just kind of love this part really.
Oh, candy. I thought we were, for a second, I was just like, candy.
I was lost for a second, too.
It's so chocolate. Candy.
I wasn't even thinking about
actual sweet treats.
No.
Not the sweet treat that's on screen.
Pink lady candy. What
all
I love,
things you
though,
love about candy, I was like, yeah.
let me name it. Full of nuts, chocolate. All right. What I love about this part, though, yes, is there's a weird, there's this like connection between her and Dale. And I know that behind the scenes, she's been spending this time with Cooper, like getting to Twin Peaks from Vegas, right? Like they've been in the limo, they've been on the jet, they've been on the police ride there, whatever. But to be in this dream sequence part that Cooper is talking about, where it's the overlay of his face and everything, I mean, for her to say, I have sandwiches, and it's just the look between her and Cooper, like it really makes me love that. Jasmine called it a wackadoodle theory that candy is like the representation or it's the reimagining of like Annie, Laura, Caroline, because these are three important women that would be in Cooper's life. It was just that kind of knowing look between the two of them afterwards. And she has her line about that. I don't know. It got to me, and all I could think of was what you said, you know, Jasmine, about what if it's supposed to be a representation of that? And then they have this little, very fleeting moment at this time where, you know.
I thought the look from Cooper said, like, okay, that's enough with the sandwiches. Like, we're good. Not a necessary time for sandwiches.
Oh, my God. I got a totally different thing.
We're already to a Granny's picnic.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's so funny.
I love this because I was full on like he is like that is his child like graduating from like kindergarten right now where he's like proud of you. Like I'm proud of you for bringing the sandwiches along, you know, like
I'm glad way you to go, pal. That.
Yeah.
Way to go, pal.
Little slug on the shoulder there. But.
All right. Well, let's talk about the superimposed face that you just mentioned, because we get rid of one double and another one reappears. I mean, like, what is happening here? What, like, why does it appear when he looks at Nido? Mm-hmm. Why? Where is this Cooper and who is this Cooper? Why is he watching over?
I also just noticed this time around that it's the second he clocks Nido is when the overlay happens. Yeah.
And is that at 2:53?
Maybe.
I don't know. Time between peaks, but
there's a moment later too, though, where it goes away for like 30 seconds to a minute.
It fades out.
It's brief, but it's gone completely.
I didn't see
that. Yeah, it's gone completely. Yeah, it's kind of right after Diane reappears.
It does.
The face is completely gone, for a moment. It may be when they kiss. I can't remember. It's like right in that time. And then it comes back. Like it fades back in. I was like, what? I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, later on when the face is still there, but there's not really anything else going on and it's kind of black and white, it makes me think of when Cooper is sitting down with the firemen and is he just like observing everything from that space? Mm. Are times overlapping?
I did think it was itself.
I don't know.
Yeah, I did think that it was for sure Cooper from another time, either remembering this or trying to remember this. Ooh. And I mean, whether it's the official version or not is hard to say, but maybe there are some parts that are like, yes, that's exactly like I remember it, or that's exactly how it's supposed to be. And that's when it's not trying to remember that anymore. It's like, okay, no, that I've got. Everything else I need to watch over and figure out.
Right. I like that.
So. I love that. And I know I said this the first time around when we covered this, but I still get super heavy Wizard of Oz in this moment because it is the whole like, and you were there when Dorothy comes back from being knocked out. You were there. He doesn't say that. He just says, I hope to see you all again. Mm-hmm. It just gives me this whole vibe of like, I don't know about being knocked out by a twister, but I mean like the superimposing of this face that's looks like it really is remembering something and then what the scene looks like, because even Bobby shows up. So it's like all of even these Bobby. People, okay. You know what I mean? Well, I'm just saying Bobby comes out of nowhere. Like, I guess He'll what I'm trying that. To say is it's like, so.
Hey, Jesse's still having a really hard time in the bathroom. What's going on?
I got here as soon as I heard. But it just, anyway, it feels a lot like that because it's obviously supposed to feel dreamlike. I know, but I just always get strong like Dorothy and I hope to see you all there or again. Mm-hmm. And it's the way it's panning the room because it's like looking at each one of the people that whether it was OG Twin Peaks, which that's where Bobby, Hawk, you know, Andy, Lucy would come in.
Right.
Or new Twin Peaks with new sheriff, new friends like Pink Ladies and, you know, the Mitchum brothers. Mm-hmm. So, Gordon is there too, but you know what I mean? So it's like a great mixture of like all of these parts of him that James. He was really directly involved with, you know, kind of all in the room together. And
yeah.
And
if James Harley had never sang Just You to Renee, none of this would have ever happened.
I forgot about James. What a theory.
Exploding.
Hmm.
I mean, it's true.
So there's true. Twin Peaks explained. No, really.
Yeah.
More do you need to know?
All the wombs shriveled up when that happened. I'm not even going to get into this, but I still do not understand why James has to be there. I know he's part of the original cast.
I just told you.
You just told me what you told me, but I am just like, there's a reason for this. Like, you don't even have a line during this time. So,
I did note that Coop is holding court very similarly to the way they did back when everyone was at the Roadhouse and he was waiting to reveal the original killer.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was once again, it was like that, but we're waiting on one more person. And then it's like, and Gordon Cole, who is right on time. Like there's there's that last button individual that has to show up right at the pinch. Like it's just very similar.
Yeah. Well, I guess the last person really to show up is Diane, right? Because that happens when everybody has gathered, like Nido finally turns into Diane. What was Nido? She's not a Tulpa, right? Was she just like a vessel for Diane's soul or something? Like,
I think she was just a hiding place. She was just a costume.
Right.
And so in that theory, I think that
the costume was blind because it's one of those things of kind of maybe if she was able to see while she was driving this thing, she might have done something rash and ended up somewhere she wasn't supposed to be by trying to make progress. If she had the ability to see what she was doing and where she was going, if she had a little more autonomy and mobility, then she might have taken a misstep somewhere or done something before it was time to do it. So by blinding Nido, it almost made it more compliant or malleable, which is gross and bad, but a way to further imprison Diane or or keep her safe, depending on how you want to look at it.
And taking away her ability to speak. I mean, because there's that too. So
can't communicate, can't see. You're a defenseless thing. But if you can't say what you are, then you can't give it away. If you can't see where you're going, you can't end up in the wrong hands by trusting the wrong people.
Yeah, it's kind of sad when you think about it like that. I mean, I think I pretty much agree with what you're saying, but I don't know.
Hey, I have a question. Sad. When we're when we're in the lodge or whatever, and the womb death bag punch bag death womb is up there.
Why is Diane's face? You guys, my band's next show, punch bag death womb.
What? Why is Diane in there? Was Diane always in there?
Oh, the thing that like Nido's head turns into this like carcassy thing. That's what you're talking
about. But it looks just like the deflated. I know that the Bob bag was blown to bits. And I, you know what I mean? Like, I know that that was bust into the obsidian pieces. But like, why is she also in a bag womb? Diane bag?
Maybe. I mean, the Nido Diane stuff is one of those things where we don't see anything. So your mind is left to wander about the entire backstory of that. Because like Mr. C, I think if Mr. C raped Diane, and if that was not long after the events of season two, I don't know if he took her somewhere like Black Lodge or something, made a tulpa, had her trapped. Part of me thinks Briggs somehow had something to do with the Nido thing too, because he's around. His head's floating after she flies away. She appears at Jack Rabbit's palace where Briggs tells them to be. Like, Briggs is a big part of the Nido story. So there's all these questions of just, did he save her? Did he help with that? And it just leaves so many question marks that just, again, gives me the Twin Peaks headache of just who did what, when, and where?
And why?
Yeah, how did she, like, was she not really Nido? Was Nido a placeholder? Was Nido trapped in the Black Lodge for this moment to swap for her to leave? Or was she just, you know, or was she just disguised, essentially? That's all it was. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's just a lot of interesting things to think about.
So many things. Like, Diane, Nido, Telpas in general will be a post-return chat. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think Tulpas are just the Black Lodge tech equivalent of like a hollowed out book. And the like flesh glass balls are just their Ziploc bag. You hide stuff however you can with what you've got available to you. And that's just how they do things. Like, you got something to hide, you put it in a flesh ball, stick that flesh ball in an empty body.
Sure. As you do.
Yeah. Now it looks like a person. It doesn't look like a book that you can open and take the cocaine out of.
And that's Mel's true. Too, like, I've with you saying too, with the, like, because I've never really thought too much just with a connection with Bob or and Nido or Bob and Diane or whatever, with those, with the visual connections you were making, that's all actually great and very interesting. But I think with Bob being with Mr. C and what Mr. C has done to Diane, or who, maybe even Nido, you know, because when I think of Nido and especially like the no eyes stuff, it's just like so visually just, man, like, jarring. It's jarring. And it's just now you've got me thinking about just a ton of different things, which is interesting. But I like all of that. So,
yeah,
it's good.
I just find it super interesting that everything that we've been given about tulpas up until now, with it being like what Dave is describing, right? Like, it's a hiding place for something, or it's manufactured for something else. I mean, but you've got essentially, you know, two Cooper Tulpa type things. So you got Mr. C and Dougie, right? It's just, why wouldn't there be two Dianes in two separate places? Like, it just makes me wonder, like, how did she become Nido in the representation of this, of the real Diane in Nido, and how visually similar it is to what Bob was represented as at the end. So I don't know. It's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting to think of. So, well, that was one for the grandkids. Are we ready to scoot on to the next part?
Let's scoot.
Cooper uses the Great Northern Room Key to enter into another dimension, New Galaxy. Sorry. Where Jeffries transports him to 1989.
I hate to say it, but our man's Coop is an addict. He's addicted to the other side. He can't be out 30 minutes and just has to go right back in.
I'm like, bro, you just left there.
It's sad.
Bro.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah. Enjoy your life to get on the outside,
Frank.
I do think this whole base, because I was just like, why are we going here? I do think it's just an interesting connection to the international pilot. I think it's just with the basement and Mike and everything, the basement of the Great Northern. I think it's just a weird way to be like, oh, and there's that is another timeline of events of how things played out way differently.
I still and ended never real seen quickly. That. I have to find a way to you have it to. And watch it. Yeah.
And then I've said many times that Phil Gerard is the most confusing character in this for me. Yeah, old Phil Gerard. I think that him not saying the poem backwards, where we've heard is him talk backwards this entire series, is that he just couldn't learn the whole poem backwards. And so they were just like, hey, that's my headcanon, because I'm like, otherwise I can't explain it. I don't understand why he's not saying like.
Because what other reason is there really?
Yeah, Mr. Lynch was like, Phil Gerard, can you learn the poem backwards? And Phil Gerard was like, you can't do it.
And he's like, can't tough do one.
Because, I guess they all, oh my God, they are already in a lodge or what, like an otherworldly space by the time they meet up. It's great that you noticed that, because in my notes, I just wrote, they meet up for an epic poetry slam. There's only one poem, but.
And it's true. And that's not, you're not wrong. That one you're not wrong about that at all.
Yeah, that's it.
Just immediately, I'm just like, why are you not talking backwards, sir? All this time,
it's a good catch.
In this space.
Or in this space too, because like, think about it. He's not in the real world. He's still over in where the stairs and the where Jeffries is, I'm assuming above the gas station, because that's, callback to the episode with Mr. C, right? But I'm just like, so why is he not? Why would he not be talking backwards in this instance too? Yeah.
One of the many mysteries from the town of Twin Peaks. You may never know.
Maybe he took lessons in the meantime and learned how to speak forwards. I don't know.
And there we go.
Get on the speech
and
coach.
There we go. He took speech therapy. Yeah. Nothing wrong with
that. Bosomy woman. The speech coach.
Mike's face. Philip Mike. One-armed man. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you want to call him at this part. Or at this point. The face.
Like poet guy.
If you can't hide your face was a person. Like the whole time Jeffries. Jeffries is tooting out these the symbols, it's so true. And he looks like he is begooped, bewildered, bebothered, bevoozled, befoozled, buffaloed.
It's so true.
I am just like, sir, you live in a fucking made up space. How is this what confuses you? Anyway,
he has the best reaction.
He doesn't get out of the. He doesn't get out of the red room much.
I guess that's what it is.
This is very new for him.
But I was like, you have been seeing heads explode, trees talking. You have been seeing gold balls float around.
He always goes like this. He always covers his eyes. He's too scared.
That is true. I'm like, so you're telling me a talking teapot is where you draw the line?
He does. Ugh. True.
It's like a dream where you find a door in your house that wasn't there before, and what's behind it is just astounding. This is my house, but
What?
I had to watch that scene so many times because I couldn't stop looking at him.
He can't get over being in the same space as another Philip.
Oh, that's what it is.
This is what happens when two Philips collide.
What? I'm begooped. Okay.
An unstoppable Phil and an immovable Philip.
Steam pop Philly or steamboat Philly and regular Phil. So
steamboat Philly back again.
Philip says you can go in now. And I just think that's a really interesting way to phrase that. Into what? Yeah. Into a dream? Into.
Well, I like it. Yeah. I like it being the opposite of Laura's you can go out now.
Yeah.
Right.
I like that a lot. Because it's just like you're going in where? Mm-hmm. Aren't you already in?
Aren't you already there?
But it's also It's like he's not allowed.
It's more like you can go back now
until somebody gives him permission. Yeah. Like, stop gatekeeping my mans.
Leave him alone. That's right.
Yeah.
No gatekeeping.
I agree though, Patrick. It seems like it would be you can go back now, or you can go
back now.
You can go there now, or something like
Mm-hmm. All right. Back in 1989, James and Laura's cuddle puddle is interrupted by Coop. Apparently, Bobby killed a guy. Who knew?
Yeah,
I knew.
And getting the finger apparently turns James on. It's the little things for him. Cooper saves the day, or does he? And Pete gets the happy ending he deserves, which really upsets Sarah.
Yeah, the balance of things really goes awry when Cooper starts messing with the past. And who knew?
Pete was not supposed to go fishing.
She's so mad.
You took the words away. I was like, she's so pissed. She's like, God damn it. He's not supposed to go fishing today. I love that. I've said this a million times. This is a million and one. Time fuckery 101. You do not alter the past. Cooper, what are you doing?
But Cooper, the only thing he knows is the past dictates the future. So
I get that, but seems like Steamboat Philly could have told him.
Percolator Cole, Phil is what I call him.
Yeah, Cole could have told him. All these people are so trapped in into what's going on here. The firemen, someone could have dropped a small hint to be like, and by the way, you don't need to mess with this. Okay?
I think the fireman has warned him time and time again.
Well, yeah. I agree. But I am just like, dude, you're not listening. Okay, I need you to focus. All I'm saying is he reaped what he sowed when we saw Sarah smashing the shit out of that picture because
maybe
you done pissed off the wrong person. That's how I feel because
I mean
she obviously knows that. Okay,
I think it's heavily evident that Sarah is reacting to something being changed, but I also am not convinced. Like, I'm just not 100% convinced that we ever know any timeline that anything is happening in.
I agree with that.
So
yeah,
I don't know if that's Sarah's response to what's happening at all. It could be something completely different. Again, I like can see that if we're looking at this linearly, it tracks, but.
Or what if she's upset because Bob got obliterated? I don't know, because it all really boils down to what is Sarah's fucking problem? Okay? Like, no, I'm serious. Like, what is your... Ma'am, what's the problem?
Tell me.
We can help. So that remains the biggest mystery to me is, like, you're right. Linearly, yeah, you could say she's mad because Cooper, you know, Laura is not... Doesn't meet up with Jacques Renault. It was so nice to see him again.
Oh, loved it.
You know, so nice, none of that played out, right? Which is quote unquote good for Laura and what Cooper thinks he's doing. But it's obviously created a shitstorm in what we're calling the present, because where we see Sarah is what we've known as quote unquote present time, right?
Sure.
But you don't know what is it that set her off. I mean, it's just, yeah. Yeah, so one thing I found enthralling was reliving James and Laura. Let me just tell you something right now. The cuddle puddle part, I didn't really care about. But when that man fucking vroom vroomed off at that red light, I died. It was hilarious. I don't care who you are.
It's very good and funny.
Even if you think James was always cool, that's great. I respect your decision.
Yeah.
Or your opinion. What I want to tell you is that the man would have no fucking feet left if he was really dragging his legs like that at the speed that he was going.
Sure.
I arrest my case, Judge.
Well, he does throw it out. At some point gets in an accident, probably because of a similar incident.
Wow. Probably because he's dragging his feet while he's riding his motor scooter. Like, motor James, scooter. He's running red lights. He's reckless as fuck. James is always supposed to be the bad boy, quote unquote, right? The casting never lined up for me. We won't bad go boy. There. But...
Yeah.
The things they put in place to try to amplify his bad boy persona is he's running red lights. He's in a leather jacket. He's on a motor scooter.
This was definitely supposed to make him look fucking cool. Like,
yeah.
Tough as shit.
Yeah.
And then he's hard. Dragging his legs. Oh, like, so hard. Sir.
He is dragging his feet. It should be noted that he's also dragging a wagon. My hang up with Cooper going back to abscond with Lara and fix the timeline is Lara's just going to be completely missing now.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. She doesn't like, where'd she go? She doesn't turn up dead,
but she's a missing person. Like, this is still going to generate pain and sorrow in the town.
Right.
And like put people into a frenzy. Like, Judy's still going to eat. Like,
which is partly why I could think like Sarah Palmer is just having a bad evening because her fucking daughter disappeared all those years ago and her husband was still shit. Like, I don't know, but
yeah.
But see, she wouldn't have known that her husband was shit because it would have never came out that he molested and killed his daughter.
There are some,
keeping that out of it. I'm just saying, like, going strictly by if she goes missing in the woods,
right.
Cooper would have never showed up, found her diary, Leland
was evil from all the fucking singing and dancing for no reason, then I can't.
And the
with
gum
Sarah.
Chewing.
Sure.
The gum chewing. Nobody chews gum like that. Anyway, it was very nice to see Josie. Super nice to see Catherine. Love it. And it was amazing to see Pete and see him go on his fishing trip. I cried because I was like, all this poor man wanted to do was fish all 25 years ago.
He just wanted to go get his head right and really got derailed. God. No, there will be trout at the Martell house tonight.
Ooh. Let me get a little dolphin sex noise in here. Who's serving the trout tonight? Pete. Peter!
Oh, I have missed Catherine.
I know. Oh, such a bummer that she was never in this, but whatever.
Yeah. Oh, man. What a way to cap this off. Like, this whole episode has been nothing but rising tension. And then, like, even when we go back to the past, like, there's that super tense scene between Lara and James. With a comedic finale, and then more tension as Sarah's losing her mind, trying to smash this invincible portrait. And then you get a little levity. Like, you get a moment to kind of go back to when you first started watching the show and just go like, oh yeah. Oh yeah.
No, it was not. It's nice actually. Yeah.
Yeah. And then people
I was
fish.
Losing my mind.
Yeah.
I was losing my mind the first, like when I first saw this.
I think most
of the episode I was standing up, but at this point I was just like,
I was doing a lot of pacing back and forth.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it still is. It's just so hard to wrap your head around this, all of it. The whole unpredictable. I've said it 1,000 times. You could have never predicted any of this. Green glove, going back in time, Lara's snatched away, like Pete goes fishing. What are you talking about?
I know.
What is happening?
If you can't believe it.
Yeah, exactly.
If you found the napkin with all of the highlights on it.
From the shop that he eats breakfast at every morning? Yeah. Yes, I would love to see that.
You would look at it and just say, this is absolutely nothing.
This shit is bananas.
Julie Crew showed up and I did a cartwheel.
Like, double back handspring and I don't even know how to do it.
Yeah, I don't. I pulled something that night and I still had to sit through part 18 after that. Oh, I had just enough time to make another cup of coffee and be like, here we go. Good night.
And I mean, I guess, like, you know, we end on Julie Cruz and, you know, let's also talk just, oh, I'm sorry.
Well, sorry, before that, I just don't want it to go without being said, like, that when Laura disappears, we hear more familiar sounds. Like, we hear the specific fireman sounds, but we also hear the scream and the whooshing from part two. Is it happening at the same time? Yep. Is that different timelines? We don't need an answer, but...
Well, the timeline's just crashing into each other. And
yeah, I think it's all crashing. Yeah, because
crashing into each other.
And time this, to me, was like Laura's line of your Laura disappeared kind of coming to life in a way. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Foreshadowing.
As a whole different Laura.
It's also kind of funny to think that she saw Cooper hiding in the bushes and screamed.
I love that. I love that. People shit on that so much, but I fucking love that.
I love it because I'm sitting there like, I'm sorry.
I think the part that's like kind of funny to me is that he tries to hide. Yeah. Like duck. He's like, there's nothing that you're hiding behind. You're just like.
And she's like, there's a peeping Tom out there. She, you know, it's like it's a strange man is staring at me from not behind that tree.
I think one of the coolest things for me was when they do finally talk, which is just crazy seeing like this interaction. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And but I saw you in my dream.
When Laura says, so that specifically, because that's another, like, we've seen this in Fire Walk With Me when she would have seen him, I guess, like in, you know, one of her dreams. So it's just like, crazy, cool, and just... You would have never thought to have outside of the Red Room, like see these two characters interact and, you know, talk. Although I should say, Laura Palmer is doing most of the talking here.
I was so frustrated I was like, Cooper, I know. Say something.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I love all of it, but I really love when he goes back to 1989 and everything from so long ago. With him in it and just seeing all of those characters again, like from that place in time, though, right? Like, it kind of makes me even seeing Jacques and Leo and like Ronette in that moment, you know, I just was like, gosh, it was so good to see. Like,
it's perfectly nostalgic. Like,
yeah.
Interesting to note, too, all of that in black and white up until she takes his hand. Right? I think that's a very interesting note, especially with what we have seen in black and white in the series thus far or in the return thus far. I think that's just it's an interesting note.
Yeah.
It's like things were one way and now they've changed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which Cooper told us would happen. So.
Right. Mm. Some things will change. Yeah.
Yes.
Alrighty. Well, you're ready for the dedications real quick.
Yes. I mean, first up, we have to say in memory of Jack Nance. That's that's what the episode actually was dedicated to, or that's who the episode was dedicated to. But I know that, you know, Melz, you lost your man on this one. So I know you got some words to say.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you all for coming to this eulogy. R.I.P. to the man who had me investing in the leggings market. Yes, Mr. C, with eyes that could suck you into a black hole, your time with us was short but memorable. May your hair stay stringy and your skin dirty.
Oof. Wow. Rip, rip, Mr. C.
That brings a tear to my eye.
R.I.P.
Not mine.
He ripped a lot of leggings over the past 17 parts.
Yeah. You kept that real concise. You know, if Bobby ever died, we'd do like 15 episodes about it. It would be like a full year of dedicated
the
episodes.
The eulogy episode.
Sure. Yeah. The eulogy series.
The eulogy series.
Yeah. Ah!
Yes.
All right. Well, we are going to head into a spoiler/connection section. But before we do that, we should thank our lovely guests, Dave. And I almost said Talking Backwards because that's what your name on Zoom says. But your name is Patrick and you're from Talking Backwards.
anything that you guys want to kind of promote right now? Like, I know you're on a bit of a hiatus, but...
We're taking a little time to restructure, but all of the stuff that we had on offer is still there for the time being. So if you're interested in checking out what we've got going on, anchor.fm/talkingbackwards is where we have pretty much everything linked up. Patreon.com/talkingbackwards. We still have some membership tiers that are worth looking into if you like videos of things, of stuff that you like. And there's still some merch out there if you want to seek that out. Am I missing anything there, Patrick?
Nope.
Perfect.
You can find us on Twitter at Talking Backward and Instagram at Talking Backwards Pod.
Yes.
Well, thank you guys so much for joining us. Thank you, listener, for joining us. And if you enjoyed the show, won't you please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform?
5 stars.
We are on Instagram at DamnFineTV. You can find me specifically at Superficial Mills.
And you can find me at DamnFineWitch. And you can also find me at patreon.com/DamnFineTV. We are doing lots of fun stuff there. Just go there, watch the intro video. You'll find it all out. Thank you so much for listening. If you're not coming with us to the spoiler/connection section, we will see you soon for the big one, the finale, part 18.
Wow. Can't believe it.
Bye-bye. Well, much like Ray tricked Mr. C and possibly filled his gun with all blanks, we also have tricked you, Finers, and not in a sinister way like Ray, but we tricked you into thinking we were going to have a spoiler/connection section when, in fact, we are not. We decided not to record one. It was kind of a last-minute thing. We're so close to the end, you know? We'll have tons of time to go over all things spoilery in part 18, in our recap, and beyond. So we just want to say one more thank you to Dave and Tyler. No, to Dave and Patrick from Talking Backwards. Tyler, thanks anyways for just existing. We hope that you will be able to join us again in the future. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And yeah, that's all we've got.
Well, if that's all for this week, we're heading back to 1989 to prevent some of the other Twin Peaks tragedies.
Yeah, but where to start? Tajamora, Civil War, the Marshlands, when Bobby killed that guy, and what does one even pack for such an adventure? Have you ever eaten moldy chocolate?
The tardigrade?
I'm Jasmine.
I swear on Satan, I'll do that. That's my headcanon.
Okay. Into it, into it, into it, into it. All of it.
I'm Mel's.
I love it.
Dumb. Dumb, 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 dumb.
Wait a minute.
And if you're watching TV,
I love it.
Make sure it's Damn Fine TV.
This is amazing.
That was awesome. Oh my God. Okay.